Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Anti-Move Propaganda 2.0. In all my years, I've never seen such biased, negative, and nasty news coverage as I have of the Philadelphia-based MOVE organization. There may be an exception. The coverage of the so-called Central Park Five, the young men charged and later cleared in the rape and beating of a young New Yorker, possibly. But both are test cases in media demonization. They just occurred in different cities. Remember the recent brouhaha over a rock and roll racist who called the president a subhuman? Editorials readily used such terms to depict MOVE, but they rarely do so these days. They are more sophisticated. Yet demonization remains. This tactic today is used as a pretext and a precursor for war. Remember Saddam Hussein called insane, or Muammar Gaddafi likened to Daffy Duck? This is but the press marching with their ink pens to wars of words. A recent article in the Philadelphia magazine entitled Lost Boy was full of innuendo and suggestion that MOVE folks beat and attack their children. The article, detailing the life and untimely demise of the man once known as Birdie Africa, was at bottom a smear piece on MOVE. Why? Why now? Because MOVE people are up for parole now, for their minimums have all been served. All of the survivors of the police attack on MOVE of August 8, 1978 have spent over 30 years in prison. Now it's time to slime them, according to the press. They do it in a more sophisticated way today, but they do it. They even gratuitously publish bits of letters from MOVE people, which gives illusion of balance. But the slant remains. MOVE is bad. Police, good. How anyone could write about the massacre of May 13, 1985 and not announce that city cops killed 11 men, women, and babies with murderous intent blares the slant of the entire piece. Cops are quoted saying stuff that suggests they never kill kids, as they are killing kids. Former police chief Gregor Sambor told members of the MOVE Commission that children, MOVE children, were considered combatants. Think of that. Combatants. Those children, combatants, were bombed and burned to death by the city of their birth. Yet the slant is a child was forced to eat fruit instead of candy and fresh vegetables instead of Twinkies. Slant. Once again, huh?
May 13th, 1985. Meanings. For years, I've written on the meanings of May 13th, 1985. The murders, the massacre, the bombing, and the burnings of the MOVE organization in Philadelphia, the unjust incarceration of Ramona Africa, and the impunity for killer cops, baby killers in blue, immune from crimes that would make devils blush. 29 years had passed, and except for Ramona, no one ever entered a jail cell. How has this impunity served the city and the citizens of Philadelphia. Today, cops, in broad daylight, rob people, testify falsely, and plant drugs on people. Recently, a Philadelphia newspaper reported on a squad of cops robbing hundreds of thousands of dollars from local businesses, walking in, tapping the till at gunpoint. State and federal prosecutors turn a blind eye like nothing happened. That's because it's nothing compared to May 13th, 1985. This is the foul fruits of May 13th. Impunity breeds corruption, and the whole city suffers. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Cal's context of white supremacy, Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Monday, August 8th, 2016. So I have been told. We will be here tomorrow, same broadcast time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Antoinette Harrell will be discussing her research on the Dozier School in Florida. Has got a lot of attention. They've been doing excavations and unearthing bodies and remains, children that were abused, killed at this infamous school in Florida, many of them black children. But Antoinette Harrell will be here tomorrow to discuss her book. Looking forward to that as well. Program for today, Mumia Abu-Jamal, you heard at the beginning of the broadcast, Gil Scott-Heron as well. We had Ramona Africa on The Cows earlier this summer, just a few weeks ago, in fact, during the Democratic National Convention, no less, and it was just great to have her on the broadcast to talk about some of her experiences with MOVE. This is the infamous organization, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Whole goal about preserving life, all life. I was listening to some of Ramona Africa's archives today, and she talked about some of the first protests in the organization were at zoos and circuses. They respect preservation of all life. But infamous organization MOVE in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where they were attempting to work against racism and promote justice. We talked about the bombing of the 1985 bombing of the MOVE residence, 11 fatalities, half of them children, just incredible act of terrorism. And not just the destruction of the MOVE residence and killing 11 people, but burning down the entire neighborhood of exclusively black-owned residences. That huge aspect of it that I think a lot of times just gets left out, just total contempt, disregard for black life. But we were able to have Ramona Africa on to talk about some of these experiences. She was one of the two survivors, just to talk about some of the history of the organization and also the conference that is coming up next year. For anyone out there, I know we talked about how to get information about MOVE because there's so much distortion and misrepresentation, propaganda against the organization in the mainstream outlets. The 2017 MOVE conference, you can certainly support their effort. It's linked in the description for the program. I posted on Facebook and tweeted out again, but you can support, you can get more information. In fact, we're going to get some of the details about the meeting they had just yesterday. Joining us live with the help of Ramona Africa, for folks who heard that program, Ramona Africa, she said that the person, our guest for today's broadcast, she said that our guest suffered as much or more than any other member of the MOVE organization. I thought that was a profound statement and wanted to hear more about her experiences. Joining us live, Miss Sue Africa. Sue Africa, are you with us, ma'am?
Yes, I am. On the MOVE, Gus, and hello, on the MOVE to everybody listening. Yes, I'm a white MOVE member, which a lot of people don't even know that there are white MOVE members, and I've been a MOVE member for 42 years, and my son, Tom was in the house May 13th. He was only 7 years old, and he was murdered. I was in a jail cell doing 12 years for a sentence that all my other brothers and sisters, except for Carlos Africa, who is Spanish, got 2 to 7 for. But I, because I'm white and because I'm in MOVE, and how dare, you know, I leave the so-called superior privileged life that this system gave me and join, you know, a black organization, you know, racism. But I didn't join MOVE because MOVE was a black organization. I joined MOVE because John Africa gave me something that I never heard before anywhere. And that was the truth about life and what life is and how important life is and how fucked up this system is and what this system is doing to people and taking the life out of people. John Africa told us that people could really see what the industrialists and the judges and cops who are the trash men for the industrialists, what this system is taking from people, the health, the strength, you know, the fertility. If people could really, really see that, they would go at the head of this monster reform system and take it down. But this system diverts people with all kinds of diversions, because they don't have solution. They do not have solution. All they got is problems. They can tell you what the problem is. They can describe the problem, and they can divert you with all kinds of things, you know, drugs, music, celebrities. The new thing now, which we see very, very clearly, is computers and cell phones. You know, just to give you a short example that I was talking about yesterday at the August 8th program, we were told we had a strong network in France, in Paris, France, and there has always been a very strong youth movement there. Young people are coordinated by nature, by instinct, by the law of life, to fight, to change, to move things. That's how young people are coordinated. But that is being killed off by a very insidious, treacherous, calculated move by the industrialists who are the real runners of the reform system.
For sure. Can I hop in?
And these cell phones and these computers are diverting the young people. I mean, we ride through the streets and young people just will walk in front of a car because they're texting, or people, period. They don't even call people and hear a human voice anymore. Everything is texting. Now, don't get me wrong. We are anti-technology, but we do believe that this stuff can be used, not misused, but used for the revolution. But people got to have their eyes opened about what this reform system is taking from them, how it's draining the life from them and taking the life from them. This is what first brought me into MOVE, this kind of information. You know, when I first heard guidelines, I mean, I'm a white girl. I came from the suburbs of Huntington Valley, which is Bucks County, Pennsylvania. My father worked for the government, Frankfurt Arsenal. He invented the ejection catapult seat. And I was raised in a very, very upper middle class academic background. So what am I doing in MOVE? I certainly did not come for revolution because I didn't know anything about revolution or feel like I had anything to revolt against. I mean, I found out later that that was wrong, but that's how the majority of white people think, unless they come under the thumb of the government. And this is a trick that's used to keep them submissive. But when I came into MOVE and I heard these guidelines, and it was about children and child rearing, and it was being read to me that, you know, a child will be scolded or beat or yelled at over dropping, spilling milk on a rug or marking up a table, and you will hurt the child who has feelings over a table or a rug that has been robbed of its feelings. I was like, well, who talks like this? This is how I grew up. This was my existence. I was constantly having my feelings hurt over, but I didn't know it was dead. You know, I didn't understand that. So, you know, I didn't know carpets were dead. I mean, I knew there was technology, but, you know, when the coordinator broke it down like that, I was like, wow, I got to hear more. And that's what brought me into MOVE. That's what brought me into MOVE, Gus.
I wanted to hop in to ask a few questions. I know you said when I spoke with you last week, you said just hop in if you,
hop in.
Will do, will do. I was intrigued at the beginning of your response where you were sharing when the MOVE residence was bombed in 1985. You were in prison at that time, and you were talking about maybe a difference in how you were treated as a white woman being in this organization. You said that the others, and if you could give us the violation again, you said the others in the group, they were doing 2 to 7s, a sentence that normally carries a 2 to 7. What was the charge, and then what were you sentenced with?
All right, the charge was inciting to riot. It was no riot. We were standing on a platform with what we were charged with was called instruments of crime, pieces of instruments of crime, because we had what they thought was guns. They were not guns. The firing pin was removed, but the police did not know that because our strategy, strategized by John Africa after 3 years of being beat by Rizzo's goons, having our women beat into miscarriage, took a stand. We knew that cops were bullies, and they intimidated, and they used those guns and those sticks to intimidate and beat people down. So the coordinator had us take a position, and we were up there on that platform that we built with what looked like weapons and bats, and we were like, you come at us with a bat, we going to come at you. You come at us with a gun, well, we got a gun too. And we backed those people off, those gun-toting buffoon cops off for 1 year, in a 1 year standoff. John Africa made a very profound statement to this system about those cops. And we were charged later, you know, we were charged later with, you know, possession of an instrument of crime, like I said, inciting a riot, but there was no riot. I mean, we were up on the platform. They were down there. There was never a riot. So they were given 2 to 7, the rest of my brothers and sisters. And this is the 77-78 confrontation, which precluded the August 8th confrontation where the cop was killed. so I got a 6 to 12 sentence, but of course I had to max out and do 12 years because the parole board put a stipulation on us. This was the stipulation, believe it or not. Leave MOVE and you can leave prison. I'm like, really? So you want me to leave my son, abandon my son, divorce my husband, separate from my family? Religious freedom is supposed to be what this country was founded on. You don't believe in your own goddamn laws. But you're going to lock me up and keep me here and tell me that if I leave my belief, I leave my religion, I leave my child, my husband, my brothers and sisters, I can leave MOVE? Well, fuck no. I'm not doing it. And we all took that position, and we maxed out. We did it the whole time. But
did other members get the same stipulation? Like, if they left MOVE, they could leave prison? Did any other MOVE members get that stipulation?
Yes. The other two, it was Carlos, who had 13 years, and Consuela, who had 14 years. She had all kind of different charges on her from August 8th. And she, they both got that. But by that time, there were so many activists And, I mean, we had all kind of supporters, people that really believed in the Constitution. They may not have really liked us, but they respected our right to have certain, you know, beliefs protected because they believed in the Constitution. And there was a lot of pressure on that parole board and the system. And, I mean, I had to max out. I had to do the whole 12 years. My sisters had to do the whole 7 years from the 2 to 7. But, you know, Carlos rolled on out of there and Consuela rolled out of there before their max because they backed up off their statement. Pressure did that. Pressure. That's what John Africa teaches. This system never does anything because it's right. They only respond to pressure.
Wow. What was your, like, if you can kind of tell us before you were a member of MOVE and then some of the details of your joining, but what was your existence as a white child, young white woman growing up prior to MOVE? What was that experience like, and what did you think about race at that time?
Well, we talked about this briefly, and I told you I never met with any racism until I joined MOVE, and then I met with plenty. I lived in a neighborhood that was very privileged. It wasn't one of those gated things, but, you know, it was very privileged. And there was only one black person in my entire town, and he didn't really stick around us. My father was also the chief of the fire company as well as, working for the government as a mechanical and electrical engineer. And when the cops would stop me for speeding, or I was picked up one time for shoplifting, I was let go, and I was told, "Now, Susan, don't do this again, or I'm going to tell your father." So, you know, I grew up looking at cops a certain way because that's the kind of so-called privilege I lived up under, because I played the game, okay? I didn't know I was playing the game, but I was playing the game. When I came and moved, oh, no, you stepped out of bounds with this one. You know, I was accused one time on a radio program. The woman said, "Sue, as far as I'm concerned, Sue Africa has lost her right to be white." I'm like, "Lost my right to be white? I didn't know it was a right to be white." But that's how people looked at it. When I came and moved, oh boy.
How did your family respond?
My family was not at all happy about it. Trust me on that one. I grew up with this statement: never judge a person on their color. That's what I was taught. And when I saw how my parents reacted, I was in shock because I was like, well, whatever happened to never judge a person on their color? That was out the window. That was just a euphemism, whatever you call it, you know? And I was in shock. But one thing about my parents, until their death, which they both died while I was in prison, they supported me. They were very upset about May 13th. They wrote the parole board letters. My father even made a statement that the members in his fire company told him, "Well, how is Susie doing all this time in prison? You know, you got rapists and child abusers and murderers that don't do that kind of time in prison." So my father started seeing, you know, hooking up, even though he was a very strict government man. Trust me on this. Very patriotic. And he did not like it that I was in MOVE. Plus, both my parents were very scared after the confrontation, and they felt like I was going to be killed. They felt like I was going to be killed. So, but just to let you know, my mother had a lot of manic depressive problems, and she, after my father died, my sister put her in a nursing home. And I used to call the nursing home, and I had a very good relationship with my social worker. And I would call there, and just to show you the kind of trust, because of MOVE law and my belief and my teachings in John Africa, how she trusted me over my sister, she begged me. She told me my sister was going to give her shock treatments for the manic depression. My mother had had shock treatments when she carried me, and she was deathly afraid of them. So I tried to appeal to the doctors through the prison. It was hooked up so I could talk to them. They didn't really respond. My mother was hysterical. She was begging me to do something. Alberta was out here at the time, and Mo was out here, and we had a support group out here. They organized a demonstration, and they went up there and demonstrated at the hospital, and I called the prison, the nursing home, and I told them they were on the way up there, they were demonstrating, and they were going to be exposed. They did not give my mother those shock treatments. And my mother was just, like, begging me to come home, which I had no control over, because she knew that I had more feelings and I was more understanding and sensitive than my sister, and that was because of my belief in Move Law. So I just wanted to make that point. But I incurred a lot of racism. Oh, my goodness. When I started getting arrested, the head of Civil Affairs, who was very famous, he was head of Civil Affairs all through the Rizzo era in Philadelphia and very famous. He planted heroin on me, and I got some charges for that. I had never been to prison. I had never been searched before, and they're telling me to pull stuff out of my pocket. He had handcuffed me. Fensel, that was his name. He had handcuffed me and behind the back. I didn't know he put drugs in me. I'm pulling stuff out of my pocket, and here I pull this big packet of white stuff out. And I had never did heroin. I did smoke marijuana, but I had never done any kind of cocaine or heroin or anything like that. And I didn't know what it was. I pulled it out. Next thing I know, I'm being booked for possession of drugs. And they tried to play it up in the newspaper. And, you know.
What year was this, after the Move bombing or before?
No. This was in the early days. Days when we were, like, what happened was we were demonstrating. But really, we were, like, protesting against this old folks' home that was up the street, and these guys, old men, and we had a car wash, and women, they'd come down, we'd give them money, we'd give them food, and they would be telling us what would be going on up there. We started protesting against that, and we started getting arrested. Then they started focusing on us. Lee Singh and Janet were walking to the store. They were both 3 and 4 months pregnant. They were stopped, beat up, sent to prison for assault on a cop, of course, and they both miscarried. So we started demonstrating against the infamous 16th District. Well, from there, we got locked up for profanity, because this is how we are taught. You don't use a nice word to describe a profane situation. We use the word motherfucker, because we're taught that motherfucker is somebody that fucks over Mother Nature and life. And that's what a cop is. So we call him a motherfucker. We substantiate it. But, of course, we got arrested for using profanity and disorderly conduct. Those were the charges. Well, we started going to prison. And then the people that were out here were demonstrating against that. And we were like a revolving door in and out of prison. Then we would get arrested because we represented ourselves in a courtroom. And they would tell us to stand up, and we would be, no, I'm not standing up for you. You're not God. You don't have the truth. You know, what do? You sit up there and roll dice. You know, comes up 6, you're innocent. Come up 3, you're guilty. We don't have no respect for that. It's not absolute. So, no, we're not standing up for you. Okay, we were arrested for contempt of court. This is how these things went down. I was in the courtroom at one point. I was 6 months pregnant with my son, and they were dragging my sisters and brothers out. They had stuffed Kotex in their mouth. They were beating them up. I stood up to put out information in this big courtroom, and in front of the judge, full view of the judge, this cop comes down and beats me with a blackjack. I had to be sent to the hospital, but I was strong. The baby was fine. You know, I was the first woman to give natural birth to my child, aided only by the principle of motherhood. And my child was 10 pounds when he was born, very healthy. And the news media came out 1 hour after I delivered him. I was doing 50 sit-ups, 25 push-ups. I ran every day right on up to the day that I delivered. And this is the kind of strength and health. And this is what appealed to me about John Africa and Move, because I suffered from manic depression. I had all kind of health problems. I had kidney problems. I was in and out of hospitals. I had high blood sugar. I had hypoglycemia. I had all of it. All of it was stress. All of it was stress. And here I am, 68 years old. I haven't been to a hospital or a doctor in, let me see, 40 years. 40
wow.
years.
Wow.
Yep, 40 years. And I'm still running. I'm still strong. I don't have no ailments. And all that is due to the teachings of John Africa. And that's why I'm still in MOVE.
Wow.
That's why I'm still in MOVE.
What?
And just to add to the list real quick, I was sent to a mental hospital when I came up for trial because the judge was like, oh, no, I can't let you go out there. You're going to get killed. He thought he could, you know, bring me around, convert me. He would call me in his chambers, talk to me, and he couldn't. I would go back out there and still do what I was doing, putting out information. So finally, he just gave up and used the tactics of intimidation, sent me to a mental institute for 6 months, and it was there that I met Momia. They never put drugs on me because there was too much pressure on them on the outside to do that, but they did try a lot of stuff with me. But John Africa always taught us to be prepared to go to jail, to mental institutes. He told us to document everything we saw. I had a good relationship with the people in there. They did not let me see MOVE people or talk to MOVE people on the phone, only my parents. And Momia came up as a reporter. This is way before his arrest and everything. He was a very, you know, prestigious journalist out here. He came in to interview me with a tape recorder, and I laid it on out. I had all kind of documentation of beatings up there, stealing money, raping the younger women, all forced medications. He put that out on the air, and when I came up for my evaluation and the judge told the head of Byberry Mental Hospital to give me another 6 months, he was like, oh, no, I can't do that. She got to get out of there. And I was released from there. And when I was in prison, when I went up to prison, we were on a 50-day hunger strike. They just swore I started that because I was white and I just got to be the leader because I'm white. And that wasn't it at all. My sisters were already up there. And when I told the coordinator what was going on, that the lieutenant, a man, told them that they were going to stay in solitary confinement for 100 years, the coordinator said, oh, no, we'll just see about that. All that had happened with Bobby Sands and the IRA, they were on hunger strikes and they had died on the 44th day. Well, we went on a hunger strike. We were strong. We were prepared. We were on it for 50 days. When 50 day hit, they got scared. They shipped me out to an all-men's prison in the middle of the night. That was designed to break me. But I was very strong at that point. I didn't come in strong, but I was very strong at that point, and I had a real strong faith and trust in Mama and John Africa and my teachings protecting me, and I was protected. Mm-hmm. I was protected. So, you know, that's some of the things that I went through. Oh, let me just top it off with this. These guards and matrons up there acting like they liked me because I was white. When May 13th happened, they come to my door and say, Sue, we're here to inform you that your son Tommaso is dead. That's how they told me. I said, yeah, well, your fucking ass has been dead already. You already dead, so get out my face. But, yeah, that's the kind of shit they would do to us undercover and the kind of stuff they did to me. Because how dare I leave the white race? And I didn't leave the white race. I'm in MOVE, but I am committed to giving information to my people. I don't hate white people.
When you say committed to giving information to my people, who are you talking about specifically?
I'm talking about white people.
Oh, okay.
That's my activity.
Okay.
That's my activity because a lot of times white people relate more so to me because I am white. But, you know, I can't be swayed by racism. You know, I'm too strong and clear at this point about what's right and what's wrong. And, you know, who the enemy is, the enemy ain't somebody black and the enemy ain't somebody white. The enemy is this goddamn system that is tricking everybody so that they can keep clashing, so that they can have all the money, all the clean air, all the clean water, getting Mars ready so they can go up there, you know, just taking strength out of black people, putting all the McDonald's, all the fucked up food, because they have been so jealous of black people's strength ever since slavery and before. That's why they enslaved black people, because black people had so much physical strength, and they were so jealous of it. They were so jealous of it. That's why slavery, really, besides money, of course, everything is about money. You know, ain't no wars for freedom. They're fought for money. You know, that's why they push this money. That's why these young people are so confused and kill life, kill their brothers, their sisters, for sneakers, for watches, you know. You know, this is just bad how this system has tricked people. And, you know, John Africa has committed, moved people to clearing up confusion and showing people who the real enemy is.
I know.
It's the industrialists.
Hang on 1 second. I want to insert context to white supremacy. Our guest, Sue Africa. One thing that stood out, or a couple things that stood out, where you said the enemy is not black people, the enemy is not white people, it's the system, the industrialists, and you were explaining. But then when you said that's why they enslaved black people, because they're jealous of them, and black people are so strong, and slavery was about money, but it was also this element of jealousy. Unless I have been misinformed, the they that enslaved black people would be white people, and whether
well, let's not forget that the black Africans helped with that too.
Oh, right.
You know, we all know history, and we all know that was hand in hand, and that was money.
Right.
Was money.
I do want to insert though. I've said, and I know many people have brought that up on the program. I take the position that there is a monumental power differential between the invading whites in the enslavement of black people and any non-white person in the universe that ever aided with enslavement or any other aspect of racism, white supremacy, and that monumental power differential makes a huge difference. But just that seemed...
Hang on one second.
Just to me, anyway, that seems like a contradiction to me, and maybe even just an error, if in this clear setting, in my view, the enemy would be whites. These are the people that are most to blame if we're going to talk about earlier eras of white supremacy, slavery. To saying that the enemy is not white or black, that's, to me, as I said, it's either a contradiction.
But
or just
what's keeping it going right
hang,
now?
Hang on 1 second before
is
I get
Is it
that.
The white man
hang
that's
on
keeping
second.
It going?
Hang on 1 second, please.
Or is
I
it
just,
the system?
I had one thing, one other point I wanted to make. And it has been to just hearing like your experiences and what you went through, and your son died in the 1985 bombing. And just some of your experience, how people have responded to you being a white person as a member of this organization, predominantly black organization in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. When we had Ramona Africa on the program, like just listening to her and what she went through, for me, it was a very different experience hearing her views and experiences and then listening to you today as a white woman. I wanted you to respond. For me, just the fact that you're white, I still suspect, even given everything that you've been through, I still, to me, you being a white woman is the dominant, most important thing when I'm talking to you and I'm hearing all of your experiences. I still have that suspicion that you could be a racist white supremacist given everything that you've done. Do you think that's logical, that a black person would still think that way? Is that logical?
That a black person would think I'm a racist?
Yes, ma'am.
What's that based on? I don't understand.
You did say that you are a white woman. Is that correct?
Well, I said that to so people would understand. I don't think white. I don't think in any color, thanks to John Africa. You know, when I first came and moved, I didn't even know I was a racist. It was actually years before I saw that. I mean, I had clues. Don't get me wrong. I had
clues like what?
Like, I'll tell you like what. I had, there was a girl in the organization, and she lived upstairs, and she's black and very raw, very black. We didn't get along at first. And she, I had a closet in my front room in headquarters. She didn't have a closet. She put a coat in my closet. And I had a coat in my closet. And her grandmother had made this coat. She had sewn it for her. Mm. And she didn't really wear it, but, you know, it had certain sentimental, and she, you know, if she had to, she would wear it, but it was kind of a dressy kind of coat, and we didn't really wear those kind of coats anymore. But, you know, I knew her grandmother had made it, but my dog had puppies, and I was looking to put something down for the dog to lay her puppies on. I went in there, and I grabbed her coat, not my coat, her coat, okay? It didn't even dawn on me what I was doing until it was brought out, you know, and she said something to me, and I was in denial, and it was brought up at a meeting. Now, I wasn't like, you know, run over with a truck and you're a goddamn racist, but that's not how things were dealt with in the organization, because people knew I was very weak and very brittle. And if they came at me like that, I wouldn't be there anymore, okay? I would have run right on home to Mommy and Daddy. So, you know, I was just given information about it being wrong and why I did it, you know, and that it was superior. But I got to tell you, Gus, it, like, still washed over me, okay?
What do you mean?
It took so many examples of, I didn't pay it a lot of attention. That's how indoctrinated I was with that superiority. Now, years later, I can tell you very honestly, I despise that trained superiority in me. I still had some of it when I was in prison. I remember the subject came up, we were talking about it, and one of my sisters said to me, "Yeah, I know, because I don't like that stuff in you, Rhea." Everybody called me Rhea. It was a nickname. And, you know, because when we go through a door, I'll open the door and you'll walk through it. I was like, I do that? I really do that? She said, "Yeah, you do it." The next day, I did it. And when I did it, I did see it. I was like, oh, my God. I did that shit. I'm fucking superior. I'm a goddamn racist. I started paying attention to that shit. All that training that has been put in white people to think like that. And all the examples, a lot of them that I told you, and a lot more that I really haven't even gotten into, beat that shit out of me. And I worked hard in this organization to incorporate and apply John Africa's teaching of equality. I mean equality for all life. Let me give you an example. John Africa teach us that prejudice of any kind, if you're not, you know, not prejudiced towards, you know, any prejudice of any category takes you right on back to the hole. We don't believe in, you know, our kids, when worms come out in the rain, they walk around and they pick up the worms and put them from the concrete onto the dirt or the grass. So people don't step on them. They don't step on them because they respect life. When we were in Rochester, this was a very dog-fighting town. And our men used to go around and break up these dog fights and give out information. Some of them even led to fight sometime because they would fight the dogs down to the death. Because they had no respect for life. You know, they saw that as just a dumb animal.
Right.
So one day, our coordinator was out there, and it was an extremely big thing. There was like the head of all the dog fighters out there. He was very big, very tough, very strong. And him and the coordinator went head to head for hours. Hours. By the time the coordinator was done talking to him, he said, "John Africa's turned him around and saved his life, and he would never fight another dog again," because John Africa was talking to him and hooking up how the same thing that he was doing to those dogs is what the white man did to black people, to slaves. you know, and ran it down real graphic how they enslaved them, how they said they weren't human, they were animals, fought them in pits, you know, misused them. And now he took the same frame of reference the white man put on him and used it on these animals.
Hmm.
And his name was Yogi, and he saw this. And this is the belief that I believe in and all MOVE people believe in.
Okay.
We don't believe in any kind of prejudice.
Hang on 1 second. I wanted to hop in. That with the analogy and how it was explained with the animals, I just wanted to insert, this is what white men and white women have done to black people. That is something I try to make sure we state correctly on the broadcast.
I absolutely agree with you.
Moving back to your
experience. I agree with you.
Oh, right. I know. Moving back to your experience, I started the question. I asked if it's logical, because I didn't hear an answer to that. I wanted to know if it's logical that me being a black person, that I suspect you even now, after what you just shared about, you know, pointing out and recognizing how you had this, what you call superiority, which I would say was ways that you practiced racism, white supremacy. Do you think it's logical for me to suspect that you right now, August 8, 2016, still could be functioning as a racist, white supremacy in some way, shape, form? Do you think it's logical?
I absolutely understand your mistrust.
Is it
I wouldn't
logical?
Expect you
is it,
to trust me.
Is it logical? Is it logical for me to suspect that you could still be functioning as a racist? Is that seems like a yes or no. Is it logical what I just said, that I would suspect you of still being a racist?
When you say logical, when you say logical, what do you mean by logical?
That this...
Is it logical that I could be? No, it's not logical that I could be, because I'm a MOVE member and I believe in life. Mm. I don't believe in prejudice form of life, and I have credentials here.
Okay,
I have credentials. We have a saying in MOVE: you don't trust the person, you trust their application of MOVE law.
Okay.
You trust the work that you have seen them do.
Okay, but for me, as a black male victim of white supremacy, when you said that I'm a white woman, and that even after I was a member of the MOVE organization, there have still been times, more than you've told us, where you were still acting out your sense of superiority in what I would say is you were practicing racism, white supremacy. You just testified to that. So there is a record of you belonging to this organization and agreeing with the principles of John Africa, but still practicing racism. That's how I would say it. So is it on
no,
that basis?
I think everybody in this organization would agree. And, you know, there was a very famous man called Herman Ferguson, from down south, North Carolina, and he really did not like white people, and he came to our events, and he got very familiar with me, and he said, Pam, I don't like white people, but I love Sioux Africa.
Okay.
Because
that's great.
That's
great and all, but I just want to say, as a black person, that's fine. If you have a lot of other black people that you've been around, that they, as character witnesses, would say that, you know, their experience with you, they like you and that you're not racist, that's fine and everything. But I'm just, on logic, I just want to make sure that I heard you correctly. You said that it's not logical to suspect that you could still be a racist 2016.
No,
today.
Because I don't believe in racism anymore.
Okay.
I did until I was confronted with all these examples and pushed to be honest. See, the thing about MOVE people is we believe in the personal revolution. We don't believe that we can get in anybody's face and tell anybody what's right unless we are demonstrating that example. So we have been undergoing a very serious personal revolution, where we are pushed to always look at ourselves and deal with ourselves, not divert to other people. Deal with ourselves and the problems that this reform system put on us. So I can say at this point, I'm pretty confident that I'm not a racist.
Okay. I do have another question about, because I think there have been other whites who have joined the MOVE organization. You can correct me on that, but I do want to make sure,
yes,
I just state for the record, that I do, Gus T. Renegade, still suspect that Sioux Africa could be practicing racism, white supremacy right now, even within this conversation. In fact, I will say, any white person that claims they have an understanding and they're willing to speak honestly about racism, and they tell you that it's not logical, or there's something invalid, incorrect about you suspecting even them, regardless of what their resume looks like, regardless of how many character witnesses and black people, non-white people they can produce to say this is an A-OK white person, that white person should still be able to say, hey, given everything that's happened, it's totally logical and you're being intelligent for suspecting, thinking,
well,
I am a racist.
I told you, Gus, that I understand why you don't trust me. I thoroughly understand that, and I admit, but
it's not logical.
But you do not understand the power of John Africa's teaching,
okay,
and the kind of push that move people get to be real, to be sincere, and to deal with their problems.
Okay.
And I wouldn't expect you to understand that. I wouldn't expect you to understand that.
That could be true, but you did, when I asked the question, you said it's not logical for you to suspect me of being a racist, and then you gave your explanation why, and I'm just saying that's the type of thing that I expect from a racist white supremacist.
I think we're getting hung up on this word logical. I think we're getting hung up on this word logical.
You could be practicing racism right now with some of the dialogue, but you know, I did have a question because there have been other white people who joined the MOVE organization. You're not the only one. And some of these other white people, it turned out that they left the organization, and it seems like that they could be practicing racism. We joined for whatever our reason was, and then we left. Isn't that the case? I think one of the members, Tony Allen, is this a former member of the
group? Oh, yeah. Now, let me tell you, though, the main reason, not so much with Tony Allen, but we had a leasing Sharon Penn Africa and Steve Africa back in the day, who were both white, and they left MOVE, and Don Glassy. But they all three of those people left MOVE because they were scared. They were scared of the government and scared of going to jail. They were deathly afraid of going to jail. Now, Tony Allen, that's a horse of a different color. What's happening with Tony Allen was he was here for a while with his wife, and as long as we could help him, MOVE Law could help him with his, you know, marriage, and she had diabetes, and she was trying to get past the needles and trying to get pregnant and all this jazz. And as long as we could help him with that, he was very seemingly devoted. But as soon as he got what he wanted from us, he took us for granted. And what happened was there was a custody case, and he got thoroughly messed up about the outcome of the custody case, and I can't go into it too much, or I'll just tie up the time, but to just cut it down to the chase, it was a custody case where a black woman was married to a white man. She had a son, and he wanted to leave MOVE because he did not want to raise his son in MOVE law. And he threatened her, and he did all kinds of stuff, and he thought he was going to beat her down, and he was going to win the custody case, because how many black women, or any women, period, go up against a man and win total custody? And she didn't want him to have any custody of her son, unless she didn't have a problem with him seeing him as long as it was supervised or in her home. He didn't want that. He didn't want that. Well, she ended up winning the custody case, and this is what pushed Tony Allen over the edge, and that's why I can tell you he was still a racist, because the thought of a black woman whooping a white man in court and winning the case was totally unpalatable to him. He couldn't deal with it. Couldn't deal with. And that is why he did what he did. That's why he did what he did.
I wanted to get your thoughts, because there have been many efforts over the years where black people have organized to try to challenge racism, white supremacy, the Black Panther Party, SNCC, long, long time, NAACP, as many organizations as you can name, where white people joined, and that's been a point of conflict. It's been a major problem frequently. Even SNCC, infamously, they had the purge of white members that caused the big problem and saying, hey, you all need to go back and work with your people, quote unquote, to solve this problem. You shouldn't be hanging out with black people. What would your response be to folks that say, hey, Sue Africa, if you like the teachings of John Africa, you should do the same. You should go back with your people as opposed to joining with these black people in this organization. What would your response be?
Well, how could I leave MOVE and go back with white people and have the teachings of John Africa? I'm never leaving the teachings of John Africa. I'm never doing that. I done demonstrated that. You know, the example of John Africa, the coordinator. Was so strong, so powerful. You know, the example that I saw from John Africa, not just to life, but standing up to the federal government. And he was arrested, and he told those people that they would not be able to hold him. And all of us were like, wow, they got the coordinator. They got John Africa. They're not going to let him go. And we were nervous. We were messed up. We were like, oh. And they found the coordinator innocent, which is unprecedented because the FBI has a reputation. When they arrest somebody and they get their man, you know, they win in their case. They're winning that case. And they kept telling John Africa that. And he kept telling them, no, I'm going home because I'm innocent and you'll never convict me. And I'm taking my brother Mo home with me. Well, that's exactly what happened. Years later, one of our younger members met one of the jurists. And I won't really, you know, give the name, but she was on the jury, and she approached him in Home Depot. Saw his dreadlocks, approached him, was he a MOVE member, told him that the only reason they were tied up for so many hours was because they were trying to come to a decision about Mo Alfonso, not John Africa. They knew John Africa was innocent. And this was a mixed jury here, okay? Black and white. And, you know, they presented all this so-called evidence. They wheeled all these bombs in and firearms and this and that, you know, talking all this stuff about John Africa. And he kept telling them, I'm going home and I'm taking my brother with me. And he never one time recanted on that. And that's exactly what happened. The DA was so messed up, he retired. He gave up his job because in his mind, he just couldn't believe it. Here's this black, dreadlocked man, you know, sitting at a table. He defended himself. He did not, you know, have a lawyer defending him. And he really never even opposed the DA. He never opposed the DA. You know, he let the DA speak. He let the DA put everything out. But when his defense came, you know, he defended himself. And he had a closing statement that brought tears to people's eyes.
I think we still have kind of drifted far from the question, because the question was, what would your response be to people who say the correct thing if you really value the teachings?
I would never leave MOVE. I would never leave MOVE. I would never leave MOVE, and I would tell people that. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with white people or black people. It's got to do with the principle of truth.
Mm.
The principle of truth that came from a being of life that I don't even like to call a man. I don't even call John Africa a man, because man connotates something that I wouldn't put on John Africa. The example I saw in John Africa Women were so attracted to John Africa, I never saw him stray from his marriage.
We're still kind of deviating.
Never flirted.
We're still deviating from the question, because this is not about John Africa. This is about you personally as a white woman.
Well, I'm trying to tell you that I would never leave Lou.
Okay.
So I would never leave Lou. I would work with white people.
So, Africa, hang on a second. So, are you saying you don't see any logic in terms of any non-white person saying that?
You're breaking up. You're breaking up. I can't hear you.
Okay. Are you able to hear me now? Am I still breaking up?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Outstanding. So the question is, you're saying in response to any individual who would say, logically speaking, we don't really need white people coming to join black organizations, regardless of how much value you find in the information, and this is something that's going towards justice, that we just...
No, I'm not saying that.
You're not saying
that.
You're not saying that you find value in
teaching. See, first of all,
I feel like you're doing a lot of interrupting here. I'm not really able to get out my questions clearly, and then you're talking for a long time and not answering the question. I'd appreciate it if you could just let me finish, and then you can respond.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So I'm saying... I'm paraphrasing. You appreciate, you value the teachings of John Africa. It's been helpful in your life, your worldview, how you behave. Fine. You're saying that for individuals who raise a concern, submitting logic saying that we really don't need white people like you coming to this organization that is predominantly black, that's not needed. We've had a lot of that before, and it has not helped solve this problem. It would be better if you're sincere. Take whatever information, the teachings of John Africa, you could take that and go work with your people, as you stated earlier. You could go work with white people to help them stop doing many of the unjust, cruel things that they
do.
No,
I couldn't.
Forms. Why could you not do that?
I do work with white people. But see, first of all, your first mistake is referring to MOVE as a black organization. You don't ever hear MOVE people refer to our organization as a black organization.
It was predominantly
black. We are the organization of life.
It was predominantly
the newspaper.
Black members.
The
was
newspaper.
Black? This is important. Was it predominantly black members when you joined this organization?
Oh, yeah, it
okay.
was.
Okay.
It
okay.
was predominantly, okay. but the news media exaggerated that because we had quite a few white people. In fact, Don Glassy, who was white, was the first MOVE member. The first MOVE member.
Mm.
Okay? John Africa did not believe in division of life, categorization of life, status. All John Africa believe in life, and that's what I believe in. There's no way I could leave MOVE and go out there and work with white people and be able to carry on my belief, because I wouldn't be in MOVE anymore.
Hmm.
I wouldn't be in MOVE anymore. And I do work with white people. We have a lot of white supporters.
Do you have a number
that
like
we work with
more than
closely? 100? I work with closely.
Do you have a number? Like how many? More than 100? More than 1,000?
Yes, absolutely. We have so many European white MOVE supporters.
Mm.
So many.
And what do they
We have a lot here.
What do they
you know, a lot in Philadelphia. You will never see the news media give that attention. You will never see it. That's why they always call this a black nationalist organization. We have never been a black nationalist organization. Never.
I didn't say that you are a black nationalist organization, but what specifically do your white supporters do?
You keep breaking up. I couldn't understand that last part.
I said, what specifically do your...
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay. I said, what specifically do your white supporters do?
Well, they do what the black supporters do. They raise support. They deal with the parole issues. They garner people to work on that. They go to the prisons and visit the prisoners. You know, they write articles and post them up on the internet. I mean, they do all those things. I mean,
well,
yesterday at the program, there was just as many white people there as there was black people.
How many people were present yesterday?
Oh, I'd say about 100.
So about 50 of them were white people?
Yep.
Hmm. Fascinating. Yep. Did they, like, what did the white members, supporters, what did they do yesterday specifically to be supportive?
Well, they helped set up the program. They spoke. You know, they we had Delbert and Janine, who are the Move 9 call in. They asked them questions. You know, one white supporter who works for Food Not Bombs, she brought free food for people that had traveled from New York and, you know, Boston and other areas. You know, they do what we all do.
Okay.
Ask questions, you know, network. We had two white supporters come all the way from Colorado. And they specifically, they're what I call techno heads. They specifically use things, which I don't understand because I'm not involved with cell phones, but they create some type of apps and different things to generate support and get things out to mass amount of people so they hear about the Move 9 internationally. That's what they do.
Okay.
That's what they do. These two particular supporters were extremely close to Phil Africa, who died in prison last year, and his name is Billy. He always talks about how Phil got him off of smoking. He was a heavy smoker, and he got him off of smoking.
Fascinating.
And so, I mean, they do what we do.
Fascinating. We have a few folks that dialed in with questions. If any of our listeners, if you have a question you would like to ask Sue Africa, the number to dial is 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. *6. People said they forgot to add that last week. If you dial the number, make sure *6. You'll hear the audio prompt. Press 1. We'll get you on the line if you have a question. Let's see. Our caller in Canada, if you had a question for Sue Africa, you should be with us. Feel free, sir.
Okay, Gus, I have a few questions. I'll start the first one. Regarding the sentencing issue, because I remember the guest said that she had a 13-year sentence because she was white. But I was wondering, because I'm not too familiar, but was it the fact that she was sent to a mental institute and the fact that she had an option to actually get out of jail, albeit unfavorable conditions? Couldn't that be based on the fact that you were white, a white woman? Hello?
Are you saying the fact that I was sent to a mental institution, couldn't that be seen as why I was given 13 years because I turned that down? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Hello?
Could it be? I'm asking. Yes.
Yeah.
I absolutely
agree if what you're saying is right. What I'm saying here is that they were punishing me. Oh, yeah, absolutely. They offered, the judge offered, you can walk out this courtroom right now if you agree to go home. They had already talked to my mother and father. They had already talked to my sister. They said, you can go live with your sister in Tennessee. She was in the military. Or you can go home with your mother and father. We already set it up. And I absolutely agree that they were so mad that I refused that they socked me out the box. Oh, yeah, that was, it's kind of similar. You know the Earth First group, which is predominantly white, they are socking them out the box for, you know, what they did in Colorado at that ski resort and certain things, because they're like, oh, no, you white people are not going to set no example. You're not going to be, you know, encouraging other white people to get out there and do certain terroristic acts. We're going to sock you out the box. And, you know, a lot of them have been thoroughly, you know, messed up by that stuff, you know, and it has had an effect on the movement. It has had an effect on the movement because they've given them heavy prison sentences because they want them to know this is what's going to happen to you when you go up against your parents. so to speak, if you know what I'm saying here.
Caller in Canada, did you have another question, sir?
But you know...
Oh, wait, ma'am. I need to ask this next question. Sorry about that. I just want to get this next one. Because I noticed when you were talking about MOVE, you know, MOVE was about, you know, not seeing color, not creating division, and, you know, it's not about you being white or black. Doesn't making the fight against white supremacy about all people and then about white involvement being innocent or neutral, doesn't that assume white innocence and in turn support notions of white saviorism and put black people besides John Africa at danger by doing this in terms of organization methodology? And that's it. That's my last question.
Well, I'm not sure I totally understand the question. I think the organization has been extremely effective with John Africa's strategy at going up against the system. And I mean, Wilson Good was black. You do know that, right? He's the one that was ordered to drop the bomb. You do know that, right?
He was the mayor of Philadelphia in the time, 1985, when the house
Philadelphia was black. Yeah, he took full responsibility.
This
he
Wilson,
took full responsibility.
Wilson Good.
We know why he did it. We
right.
know why he did
but
it. And
Wilson Good. This is what I've been saying. Like sometimes your responses, like they're not related to the question. I think you did say that you were having some trouble understanding the question. The caller in Canada, can you like succinctly maybe restate it, and we'll see if Sue Africa understands it a little bit better.
Okay. I'll restate it. So when we, I guess, when we sort of say to see beyond color, and, you know, when I sort of looked at the way you responded when Gus asked you about, you know, white people going to white people to change racism rather than working with black people, doesn't that create a sort of white saviorism by insisting that black people have to work with white people in order to create change?
We don't even pose that kind of question or information to people. We just work with people and go at the system. You know, the fact that the system is, you know, controlled by white people, but then you have people like Colin Powell and Wilson Good who are black on the outside but are white on the inside because they... Yeah, Obama. How are you going to get past Obama? The only reason they put him in office is because they got him controlled and he is a slave to status and money and all that. See, that's what we attack.
That is very important.
We don't.
That is very important, what was just said. I just want to get our next caller. But all of that, at the end of the day, about President Obama, they control him. The they that is unnamed in that, I suspect, are white people. The caller that dialed in from New York, Thomas in New York, did you have a question for Sue Africa?
Absolutely.
Your volume is very low, sir. Your volume is very low, sir. If you could speak up.
Is that
yes, sir.
Probably the other.
You sound like you could be breaking up a little bit. Can you give us another sentence, please?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hello?
Greetings.
Yes, so good evening, Gus, and good evening. Good evening to Mrs. Sue. I had a quick question.
Hello?
A yes-no question, then a follow-up. How are you? I have a very quick yes-no question for you, just for clarity. Did you say earlier that the first member of MOVE was a white person?
Yes, I did. Don Glassy, in fact,
my second question.
System tried to say that he was John Africa. They tried to say that Don Glassy was John Africa. Yeah, tried to say, and then when we kept protesting and going up against it, they tried to say, well, he was a co-founder because he was white.
Okay, my second question to you. You keep talking about it's not the people, it's not black people, it's not white people, it's the system. And I just wanted to know exactly what people are in control of that system.
Um, I agree that white people are in control of the system, but if people like Obama and Wilson Good and Colin Powell, you know, if they are going along with it, then they right. They basically right, okay? I mean, you keep wanting to call color, but I'm talking about it's a way of thinking.
Wow.
It's a way of thinking. And what's behind that whiteness is the money.
Wow. All right, can I just get my last question in, please? Last question for you, Mrs. Sue. I can't call him a white person.
No, I think you misunderstood what I said. I said Colin Powell, Obama. Do you see? Okay, go ahead.
Wait, I get you. It's all a black people's fault. I got you. My question to you is, what is your definition of racism, white supremacy? And I'll mute my line. Thank you.
You broke up. I could not hear you.
His question was, what is your definition of racism?
I asked you, what was your definition of racism, white supremacy?
What is our definition of racism?
Yours specifically.
Racism, mine specifically? Racism is anything that tries to kill off the life in people. Whether it's, you know, against the race of life, the race of people, you know. I mean, that's as best as I could say. We see it as a way of thinking. We don't see it as a color. We see it as the way of thinking. Yeah, because, you know, if you had heard me earlier, you know, when we were talking about this black dog fighter up there in Rochester, you know, he was a racist.
Was this a black person? Was this a black person?
Yes, it was. Oh,
okay.
Oh, yes, it was. It was a black person.
Of course. The person that called in last four digits, 9401, did you have a question for Sue Africa?
Oh, my God. Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Okay, I tuned in a little bit late. So I got like a piece of an anecdote, and she said something about the person being very raw and black, and I would like her to clarify what she means by that.
I think that was
okay.
The
what I mean is real. White people at least
raw and black. Yeah.
Black people. This particular. Sometimes you have black people that are sophisticated. Birdie was very raw. She is very down to earth and pure and outspoken and honest and, you know, didn't bite her tongue. Real. Something that the majority of white people, at least where I come from, are not like that. They're not like that. They're very, like, subdued and, you know, sterile.
Did that answer your question?
Hello?
So when you said she was very... Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, so when you said she was very... Okay, so when you said she was
yes,
very...
Yes, I hear you.
Like
I hear you.
Down to earth, that's what you're saying?
Did you hear me when I said she was... She's very, like, honest and out in the open, out front, you know, outspoken, not devious. Not devious, not...
You're coming in and coming out. You're breaking up. You're coming in and coming out.
Goodness.
Can
you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
She's a
very honest, out in the open person. She has not got layers of deviousness to her. She's not sterile. Not coded, like a lot of white people coming from my background are. That's why I couldn't relate to her. It took me years, and now, you know, we are the best of friends now because we've gone through so much together, so many crises together, that I have nobody that I trust more and closer to than her.
Okay, I have one more question for you, and that's it. Why is it when you get asked directly about white people's complicity, or, you know, how they participate and how they're in control in the system of white supremacy, why do you deflect the question and place the blame on a black person? Is that how you practice racism? And that's my question.
How did I do that? How did I do that? Can you tell me exactly how I did that? You mean when I mentioned good?
Just.
Or when I mentioned Obama? Yeah, I can.
Obama, right? And the mayor of Philadelphia, right? And that dog,
right.
That dog fighter.
And the black people in Africa.
Right.
The black people in Africa who sold the slaves.
Because they are a victim. Because they are a victim of the training of the system. I wasn't blaming them. I'm blaming their training, how they were taught. Because when the black dog fighter met up with True Clarity, he said, I don't own that dog anymore. I don't own him. Just like the slave master said they own the black man, I don't own this dog. This dog is life. He's free. And he thanked John Africa for clearing that up for him. And he said he would never fight another dog again. He met with Clarity. And he was cleared up. But he was a victim of training and education in the system.
I'm just sharing this.
Can I ask one last question?
I just want to say this. Yes, ma'am. You can ask
is
your question.
Possible?
I just want to get this out just for the record. Generally, when I talk to a white person, if I'm interviewing them on the program, I would not have somebody else like contributing to the answers. It sounds like there's somebody in the background who is like contributing answers and what have you. And that is, it's kind of an annoyance to have them contribute because I don't know who the person is. And it seems like they're adding on the same of your answers. And it also, I suspect that this might be a black person. That too, just if I'm talking to a white person,
this is actually my husband who is, you know, a black person, okay?
Oh, okay. Is he a white person?
And he
is
was
your
telling me
person?
To put out...
Is your husband a white person?
Yeah, he's a white...
Okay.
He's Spanish, but he's a white Spanish person. He's as white as me, but he was simply telling me to put out that example that he did 13 years in prison.
Well, I mean, that makes it even worse if this is just another person that I would suspect of being a racist who's just contributing on the side, because I don't know who this person is. He was not invited on the program as a guest. It's kind of an annoyance to have an additional participant, and I don't know if you know.
Well, he does not have to be here, but, you know, I really don't understand which way you're coming. I have come to you honest, putting out, you know, solid, good information about John Africa and MOVE, and it just seems like you laying in the cut here trying to prove that I'm a racist, and that's all you're concerned with.
I'm not even asking questions.
That's all you're concerned with.
I'm not even asking questions right now. The listeners are asking questions. The female caller said she had an additional question. I'm not even having any other response to that. I appreciate you sharing some of your time with us, but these are earnest questions that I and the listeners have. The female caller, did you have another question for Sue Africa?
Yeah, I do. Thank you. I just want to know, do you think white people are victims of racism and white supremacy?
Victim?
Did you hear my question? Of racism,
yeah,
supremacy.
Do I think that white people are victims of supremacy? Is that what you're saying?
White supremacy.
Is that what you're saying?
Victims of racism, white supremacy. Of victims of racism, white supremacy.
I don't really know how to answer that. I think that white people have been trained to feel superior, and that makes them victims, but I don't know about victims of white supremacy. I mean, I guess a white supremacist would probably see me as an enemy and come at me. I could see that.
Fascinating. The person that dialed in, last four digits, 2534. 2534, did you have a question for Sue Africa?
Good evening, Gus. May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Good evening, Gus. Good evening to all the callers, listeners. Good evening, Ms. Sue.
Hello.
My question for you is, have you heard of Frances Cress Welsing and her theory on, or her definition of racism?
No.
And
no, I've never heard of that.
My next question is, my question is, if you're going to raise the injustice in this world, you've mentioned the system. It is a system that has oppression.
You are breaking up a little bit, sir.
I know, I can't understand anything that is being said here.
Yeah, I can't. It's like your line is breaking up.
Is that better?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. My next question was, if you understand that it is a system that's oppressing everybody, and that you need to be separate, or that you can make separate movements, you don't have to be in a organization. Wouldn't it make sense for you to separate yourself and try and push for justice on your own? And that's my last question. I'll mute my line. Thanks.
No, it wouldn't make sense to me, because if I leave MOVE, you know, I am divorced from my belief. And MOVE is not a black organization. MOVE is the organization of life. The organization of life. All life. All life. We represent all life without prejudicial categorization. I mean, we demonstrate against all arenas of exploitation.
If it's even possible, I prefer if that person, if they could, I mean, I can't tell you how to run your house or what have you, but if I could request,
yeah,
he left. Okay, yeah, because that's just, it just seems really incorrect. Thank you.
Okay, I hear you.
The caller, did she answer your question? Was that your last question, sir? The caller.
I mean, it did, in the sense that, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
It did answer my question in the sense that I understand the system, and I understand that MOVE to me is not an organization to help black people who are the most brutalized in this system. It's just a system to include themselves to, I don't know, for bells and whistles. I don't know what to say, but just trying to ingest everything that's been said and that you guys are talking about. So I'm going to mute my line. Thanks, Gus.
Yes, sir. The black female caller.
Hello.
Yes, ma'am. We had another call. I'm just trying to go quickly to see if I can get as many of the callers as I can. People have a lot of questions. When it's trying to get to as many as we can. The black female caller in New York. Did you have a question for Sue Africa?
I have two. May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
My first question is, prior to your involvement with MOVE, did you date black men?
Actually, the first and only black man I dated was the man that brought me into the organization, told me about MOVE. I met him in a restaurant, and he told me about, we both worked in a restaurant, and he told me about John Africa's teaching, and he's actually the one that brought me to the first study session.
So the answer is yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Regarding the white people who you say support the MOVE organization, I'd like to speak briefly about Osage Avenue and the destruction of an entire black neighborhood. I'd like to know, what have you or any of the white people in the MOVE organization done to directly impact the lives and the livelihood of the black people who were bombed that day?
You're talking about, please, we have very good relations with the head of that organization there, and we have been working with those people. They come to our program and speak about the injustice that this system put on them and Wilson Good put on them in the city of Philadelphia. And we have been working very closely with them.
I'm asking
for
what we did.
Networked with them, it's broken up.
Sorry,
I couldn't hear it.
What was that?
I think
entirely broke up. I didn't hear you.
Yeah, I think, and there seems like it might even be a delay. The caller in New York, you kept saying, I think you were trying to just make sure you amended your question. I think you were asking her personally, but go ahead, caller in New York.
Yes, I'm just asking, yes, what have you personally or any of the white people who support the MOVE organization done to restore, not just demonstrate or have them speak, to restore their livelihoods?
Restore their what?
Their livelihoods.
I can't hear.
Livelihoods.
Their lives. Well, we
participated
with them at their request to bring what people home are you talking about? The people that lived on Osage, or are you talking about my brothers and sisters in prison, the MOVE 9? Is that what you're talking about? Are you talking about my brothers and sisters that have been in jail for 38 years?
I'm not talking about any of those quote-unquote brothers and sisters of yours. I am talking about the people who are innocent victims of that bombing and the white people that you say have their interests in at heart. What have they done? The white people who are supporters
of the MOVE
organization.
Our priority is to bring our innocent people home and to never let Philadelphia or anybody else forget what they did May 13th, 1985. That is our priority. Now, in terms of those people and their houses, I personally, at their request, because my son was in that house and killed, they had some kind of play that was dealing with Osage Avenue and what happened. And they asked us to participate in that with the head, the block captain of that Osage Avenue residence. And I participated in that as much as it bothered me to talk about that situation and be there and talk about my son. I went and supported them.
I believe that my question was not answered, Gus, and I suspect that the guest is practicing racism by not directly answering my question. So I'll go ahead and mute my line and you can move on.
Right on.
You're just saying just buckets and buckets of words.
The caller down in Florida, 1078, did you have a question for Sue Africa?
Hey, can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Good to hear from you, Devin.
That's all right. Good to hear from you, too, Gus. I'm sorry I came in just a little late. I was having a little bit of interference. Now, I just wanted to know, did you get an opportunity to ask the guests or to inform the guests of your definition of racism, white supremacy?
I did not.
Okay. All right. So, what I wanted to ask the guests specifically is, why are you so vulgar?
I don't understand what you're saying. All I see this is a diversion, for real. You know, I use certain words to describe certain situations.
Let me ask the direct question. Why are you
the vulgarity? You know, this entire radio program has been nothing but a set up to try to point the finger at me as being a racist. And I suspect, Gus, that you must be involved with the police here, because there is a racist diversionary movement going on right now, right here. Because every person that has called here has tried to attack me. So obviously, y'all hate white people, and the very fact that I've been in MOVE for 42 years, setting an example that not only my brothers and sisters, but all kinds of black people from all kinds of black movements respect. You must be cops. You must be cops calling in here. You just must be trying to divert, you know, my energy and submerge my energy. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not going to stay on this line anymore and allow it, because you people are being used by this system to push racism. That's what you're doing. That's what you're doing right here. I don't even know why you invited me on this show. You're trying to use me as some kind of target. You don't give a fuck about MOVE people being in jail and being innocent. You don't care about what this system is doing to life. All you want to talk about is white people. And where is the solution in that? Where is the solution in that? You ain't got no goddamn solution. You ain't got no goddamn solution. John Africa got solution. He got solution. He talking about bringing people together to fight our common enemy, which is the goddamn industrialist. And you're right. I use words that are vulgar to describe a vulgar situation. And if you can't understand that, you're a loser. You're a loser. Because there have been very few people in the world that cannot understand that. You don't use a nice word to describe a profane situation. After everything this organization has been through, you're going to get on the air and talk some stupid nonsense about why are you so vulgar, Sue Africa. That is the most mundane, despicable, racist comment I have ever heard. And Gus, I don't know what your game plan here is. It's obviously you are being used to set something up here to divert people away from John Africa's information. So you're a cop. You just like I'm talking to this radio man.
That's fascinating. But you did answer the question, his question about
it. All you can say is that's fascinating. You don't have no respect for Ramona Africa. You don't have no respect for MOVE people. You don't have no respect for the 11 people that were killed in that house. All you have been doing is using this show to take pot shots at me. You don't have no respect for Mumia Abu-Jamal. Mumia has never disrespected and treated me like this. Mumia has never disrespected me and treated me like this. And you say you support Mumia? You don't support Mumia. You don't support nothing right. This whole entire show has been nothing but a setup from beginning to end. That's all it's been.
The caller had
You
did answer the caller's question. He said he did have one more question for you, because you did answer his question about the profanity. I think you explained it well. Caller, what was your other question?
I'm just amazed. You can move on to the next caller. Thanks a lot, Gus, for allowing me to be on the show, and good luck with everything, Ms. Sue.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. He was stupefied. The caller, Roz, did you have a question for Sue Africa? We have a few other folks, if you can just bear with us, because I am learning a lot. It has been a little bit contentious at times, but, you know, that's not that big a deal. And I appreciate you taking time to speak with us, Miss Africa. Roz, did you have a question? Sue Africa, you should be with us.
Yes, I do. Greetings to you, Gus, and I'm greetings to you, Mr. Sue.
Hello, on the MOVE. Hello?
Yes. I wanted to ask, do you think that there's a large number of white people that are dedicated to fighting racism and white supremacy?
Let me see if I, because you did break up. Do I think there are a large number of white people dedicated to white supremacy? Is that what you asked me?
No, dedicated to.
Hello?
No, if they're dedicated to fighting. Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, dedicating?
Hello?
I don't think it's a real large number. No, I don't think it's a real large number. And I'm going to tell you why I don't think that. Because recently, when they had the shooting in Dallas, they actually had a white woman on CNN, and that was talking to black people and talking to other white people, and she was running down all. They were trying to say that the man in Dallas was not justified. Okay, that's what they were trying to say, and they actually acted like they had absolutely no idea or feeling or couldn't get it, didn't have a clue why this happened in Dallas. And the woman, who was a white woman, very knowledgeable in legal terms, was running down all kinds of facts and figures and about how many black people had been killed by cops. And these people, the white people, were saying, well, white people are arrested, too. White people are hurt by cops. And the woman was saying, yeah, I know, you know, but nothing like black people. And all these people, one prestigious person after another, was coming on there. And I'm like, they don't have a clue. They don't get it. And right there, I mean, I already knew it, but right there, it confirmed what I thought, that yes, a large number of white people are victims of that training of white supremacy. They are. They don't even realize it, but they are. Look, I don't know if you came in early, but if I hadn't come in news, you know, I told Gus that my only experience was with police was being stopped for driving the car too fast or whatever. I was treated with kid gloves because who my father was. That's the only experience I had with cops. That's all I knew. I didn't know nothing else. So I was absolutely a victim of white supremacy. Hello?
Now, how can a white person...
Hello?
...the system is designed to give... Hello? Can I be heard?
Yes, I hear you.
Hello? Okay.
I hear you.
How can a white person be a victim of a system that was created by their ancestors for them to be in control and dominant over non-white people in perpetuity? How can you be a victim of a system that was made for you by your ancestors?
Well, because most times, white people are losing so much they don't even realize that they're victims. When I talk about losing, I'm talking about they get cancer just like black people, and they get it because the industrialists are poisoning the air.
I'm not talking about cancer. I'm talking about the fact that white people have dominated all other groups across this planet, which they still do. These people are subjugated and getting killed on a regular basis. And I don't understand how a global system that was created for white people to be in total dominance of non-white people in perpetuity can victimize the people that it was created for. That doesn't make any logical sense.
Well, I'm not saying they're a victim. I am not saying they are a victim.
How am I going to be a victim of that system when I'm getting all of these benefits? I'm getting benefits every day. The police don't shoot at me. I can pull a gun on a cop and disrespect them and not get killed, whereas a black person could be unarmed with their back turned to a cop and get 40 shots in the back.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you with that. I do agree with you with that. I agree with that.
Was there another question, Roz?
My last question would be, yes, my last question would be, do you think that, since, if I heard you correctly, you said that black people can't be racist. Is that correct?
Well, I see, a MOVE definition of a racist is different than, I think, your interpretation of a racist. You need to tell me what your definition of racism is.
No, I'm asking you, what I was asking is, did you say earlier that you believe black people can be racist? I believe that's what I heard. Is that correct?
Yes, I did say that. I did say that. Now, I was talking about black people that see white people as racist. And, like, when I went to prison, you know, and I wasn't saying they wasn't justified for feeling that way. But, yeah, you know, I had some moments up there where black people would gang up on me. And until I really demonstrated a certain example, yeah, I felt like I was a victim of racism. Yeah, I did. But I guess you don't believe that.
For those black people you believe are racist, would you call them white supremacists, or what would you call them?
Who?
Who
are you talking about now?
Would
I call them white supremacists? No, God, no. What are you talking about? No. Would I call black people white supremacists? No. Just people that believe that I hated
for them to be supreme.
Yeah, well, see, most people don't get caught up in all this lingo here. To me, that's why I asked you what your definition of racism was.
Okay, hold on a second, Roz.
All right, well, I...
Okay.
Hang on a second, Roz.
All I'm saying is, to me, racism is abuse.
Hang on a second. I just want to clarify his question so I can get to the next caller. I think he's saying for someone, since you kept emphasizing that Wilson Good, this is a black male, he was mayor of Philadelphia at the time, you mentioned President Obama, some of the other folks. If you're saying that some of these individuals also practice racism, what title would you use in, what would you call them, basically? Would you call them white supremacists, since they too are...
I don't have a title. Okay. I do not have a title. Okay. The coordinator, John Africa, wrote about people like him, Wilson Good, in the guidelines, and called them niggapians. That's what John Africa called them. Ain't my word, okay?
Got it.
That's what John Africa called them.
Got it. The caller that dialed in, the astute one, did you have a quick question for Sue Africa?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Good evening to everyone. Miss Sue Africa, I'd like to ask you, you just said that you think that Gus is, you know, police or whatever, and he didn't have any solutions. What is your solution to racism? What do you have any solutions?
Yeah, we do have solution. We do have solution. To leave all the categories alone and love life without prejudicial categorization. And life is what comes from Mother Nature. And to respect all life, because all life is linked, all life has a purpose, all life is necessary. And if life is your priority and not money, not status, you won't hurt life. Our young people love life. They will never beat their wives. They will never abuse their children. They will never fight a dog. They will never hurt a black person. They will never hurt a white person. Now, that is not to say they will not defend themselves, because when you do not defend yourself, you do not love yourself. And we are taught to love ourselves as well as all life. Now, that's our solution.
So, if that's your solution, why hasn't it solved anything yet? How do you get people to that point? Like, you're saying everyone should love life, but it's obvious that... How do we get to that point?
Well, let me tell you,
You're stating a goal. Mm-hmm.
Well, we had people come in this organization that were assassins, rapists, you know, so-called prostitutes, scientists who killed mice. We had all kinds of people come in this organization. And John Africa was able, through his teaching, through solution, through work, to bring all of them together to love life. I mean, it took a lot of work, and people ain't all the way there. Trust me, we ain't nothing like John Africa. We ain't. We ain't, because we come from this system, and we are tainted by this system, and it's constant work. But if you love life, see, a cop, even if one of them wanted to be right and became a cop because he wanted to be right and to protect and serve and all that bullshit, even if he wants to be right, he gets corrupted along the way because the system is not set up like that. They're involved in all that crazy stuff. They become corrupted. They become twisted. They don't, you know, they don't have any type of feelings in them anymore. They become sadistic. All they see is beatings, even if they didn't start out beating people. They end up that way because your influence is your influence. If your influence is wrong and deadly and sick and sadistic, that's how you gonna be. And the way a police organization is set up, just like politicians, you got some people that go into politics to help people. Do they end up helping people, or do they get washed away by the system? Everything good they try to do, they get knocked the hell down. They get set back, or they don't get reelected, or they get set up. Because the system is not created this way. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about eliminating the system, that education. We don't send our kids to school, because when you send your kids to school, they're taught all kinds of shit. Okay. Division,
Sue
conflict.
Africa, the caller, he did have, I think he wanted to get his question in, sir. Go ahead, sir.
Miss Sue Africa, I missed some of the earlier part of the show, but I would like to know, did you say you had some, did you have some, like, mental health issues before joining the MOVE organization?
No, I didn't say that. I said that when they arrested me, the judge tried to get me to leave MOVE and offered me a deal, and when I did not take it, as a form of intimidation and control, he sent me to a mental hospital to try to beat me down. That's where I met Mumia Abu-Jamal. He came in to interview me. But no, I mean, I didn't have any more mental issues than anybody else out there. I mean, I wasn't, like, you know, psychotic or, you know, sociopathic. I mean, I did get depressed. You know, I did get depressed. But no, I didn't have the kind of mental issues that I think you're talking about here.
Well, Ms. Sue Africa, I just want to say, you said, you know, I guess Gus didn't have any solution. It doesn't appear that you have a solution either. But, you know, maybe I could be wrong. But thanks for trying to answer my question.
For sure.
All right.
Our caller in Michigan, did you have a question for Sue Africa, caller in Michigan?
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
I just had a quick question. I'm not sure if you guys addressed this or not. I missed a lot of the show. But who do you feel is most confused about racism, white supremacy, white people or non-white people, and why? And I'll mute myself.
Did she say who is the most confused about racism?
Correct.
Is that what she asked?
Who's the most confused about racism? Who's more confused or the most confused? White people or non-white people, and why?
I would say white people, because they're more indoctrinated by the system to see themselves as superior, and they don't even see that racism exists in them. You hear all the time white people say, oh, my best friends are black, or I dated a black man, or,
You know, and none of that has anything to do with them not being racist.
I just want to insert, I'm laughing, because that's exactly what you did today, in my opinion. That's exactly what you did today.
What? No, it is not what I did. No, it is not what I did. You are absolutely wrong about that, Gus. I did not do that today. Oh, no, I didn't. No, I did not. You're wrong about that. I said that my parents said that, and I was in shock when they said that to me, when they taught me all my life, don't judge a person by their color. Now, you know, I never said that because I dated a black man that I wasn't a racist. I never said that. I told you I was a racist when I came in this organization, but I did not know it for a long time. And then when certain examples came out throughout the organization of me being superior and treating black people inferior, I started seeing that then. But I never said that I was not a racist because some of my best friends were black. I never said that. Never said that. I don't know what you're talking about here. Could you clarify yourself?
I can. I might for listeners, but I don't feel like clarifying at this moment. I just want to try and get through some of the calls.
Well, that's because you can't, because you just lied on me, Gus. Just lied on me.
All right. I've been accused. The caller is 6353. Did you have a question for Sue Africa? 6353.
Yes. Good afternoon, Miss Sue Africa. I just wanted to ask a yes or no kind. Yes, ma'am. Do you believe in reparations for black people who were enslaved in America?
I do believe in that, but I don't think that's the solution. I do believe that they should be given reparations, but I don't see the system as ever doing that. And how can they ever make up for what they did to black people's ancestors by reparations? How can they do that? They can never make up for that. I don't care what they do.
Yeah, I know.
They just can't do it.
Yeah, I see you.
Hello, I can't hear you.
Did you have another question?
I have another question. Sir?
Yes, ma'am.
The last question. Because a lot of black people are suffering from unemployment and all kind of discrimination on their jobs and with employment. So it's a very high unemployment among especially black men. I just wondered, what do white people talk about when it comes to hiring black people? When there's no black people.
Let me see if I understand this. You're asking me as a white people,
What do white people talk about regarding unemployment economics for black people when there are no black people around?
Gus, she's breaking up. Can you clarify that for me? I'm still missing a lot of words here.
I think the question was, you as a white woman, what have you heard other white people talking about with regards to employment, unemployment, economics regarding black people? What have you heard white people talking about these issues when there are no other black people around?
I really can't answer that because I don't know. When I was in the system before MOVE, and that was 42 years ago, I did hear people, you know, use what they call stereotype labels on black people, like, oh, they don't work hard enough, they play around and laugh too much, you can't trust them, things like that. I remember hearing that because I worked in a restaurant and I was a waitress And then I was a waitress for a long time, and that's what I used to hear. You can't depend on them. They're going to take their money and get drunk, stuff like that. That's the kind of things I would hear them say.
Okay. Appreciate that call.
They're not steady.
The caller at 184-
Thank you, Gus. Thank you, Miss Africa.
Right on. The caller at 1-842-1842. Did you have a question for Sue Africa?
Thank you for taking my call.
Your volume is very low, very,
you.
Very low. It's hard to hear you.
Oh. Is this better?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello. Okay.
Hello, I can barely hear you.
Okay.
Yes, now I can hear
okay.
you.
Okay. I wanted to ask you, okay, great. I wanted to ask you about your husband, because I see his last name is Africa. Was he a part of MOVE?
Gus, that broke up something about my husband, but that's all.
She said, was your
I heard.
Husband? She said, your husband, she sees his name, last name is Africa. Is your husband also a member of MOVE?
Yes. Yes, he is.
When did he become a
MOVE? Yes, he's
he
been a MOVE member.
Part of MOVE, or is he like a new?
No. No. Actually, he came in the organization after me. After me. You know, but he's been a member for, I would say, 38 years, 39 years.
Okay.
Yeah, 39 years.
Okay.
39 years.
A lot of what you're saying, a lot of what you were saying, I tried to look to see if there's, like, any information about what John Africa was teaching or what he was saying outside of what you were saying. Do you know of any of his original, like, where we could find original writings or original documents or anything where he actually
yes.
has his thoughts and not them coming
yes.
from you?
Yes, I can. I can. He, are you anywhere near Temple University in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia? Hello? Hello?
Is there like a point of contact there? Is there like, hello?
Well, no, they have an archive. They don't let you take it out, but they have an archive where you can go in there and read a lot of John Africa's original writings, and he also, back when the Philadelphia Tribune, back in like 1973, 74, 75, he also wrote a column for the Tribune, and there were some original guidelines in there. We also have some excerpts from his original writings in a paper that we put out years ago. And you could get some of these newspapers if you contacted Ramona. I can give you her phone number if you want. That's 215-386-1165. Mm-hmm. And you could just ask her if she could send you some of those newspapers. They're called First Day. They're called First Day. And we actually have some of those Tribune articles, too, that we could send you. We have them cut out, so it would take a little time for us to, you know, get that together. But if you call her and you give her your address and everything, she will send you a packet. Hello?
And then my final question, yes, thank you very much for providing me with her phone number and everything. I can reach out to her and conduct my my research from there, so thank you very much. I did have one question, just because I myself am a victim of racism, and I am quite suspicious of all white people. But I was just curious about this one thing. I was listening to you when you were talking about the two black women who were beaten and miscarried, and you who were then beaten
mm-hmm.
but were so strong that you...
No, one was... No, one was black. One was black, and one was white. Lee Singh, she was a white MOVE member at the time. She was white, and she miscarried. And Janet Africa, she's black. She she's in prison still, and she miscarried. You know, I think perhaps they miscarried early because they were carrying, you know, when she was, you know, they were both like, one was 3 months, one was 4 months, and I was 6 months. I was a little further along, and I was beat.
Okay.
I was
my
actually
question,
beat in the head and the back.
I know we have limited time. You said, I'm sorry, what's the last part? You said you were what?
I was beat with a blackjack on my head and my back. Lee Singh, who is the White Move member, was actually kicked in her stomach. Janet was punched in her stomach.
Okay, and that was kind of what I wanted to ask you, because when you told the story, it was like they were weak, essentially, and you were just so strong that you pulled on through and were able to have your child without any kind of assistance or epidurals or whatever it was. And I was just
she broke up, Gus.
Really,
I couldn't hear that.
Whether or not y'all had experience, I said that that was the point that I was getting at. So thank you for elaborating on how the beatings were different. Because when you told the story,
okay,
you made it seem as though you were so strong. Can you hear me?
Yes.
That you pulled.
Oh yeah, I can hear you.
To have your child. Okay. And I was saying how.
Oh no no no!
Story.
I just
it was like I was so
no,
strong.
No,
and I pulled. Excuse me, Ms.
No.
Wait a second. Let me finish the question, please. Then I'll let you, you know, finish. This way we can move on, because this is my last question. And I was just curious as if you had considered whether or not the nature of the beatings were different. Because the way that you speak is almost like you don't take into account that perhaps your treatment was different because you were white, and then you've added this element of you just being so strong or so quote-unquote down or committed, and other people just were weak or something like that.
No,
and,
I just...
You know, I don't really think that you have a full understanding of it, so I was curious about that.
No, I just explained myself here that they were in their early months, and the coordinator, John Africa, told me that I had gotten very strong. This was years later, years and years later after Lee Singh and Janet, and that's the way the coordinator taught me to think, and that's why I was able to have my baby like that. It wasn't... What I say wasn't a result of superiority, because they were pregnant in their very early months, and they were beaten. You know, one of them was kicked in the stomach, and one was beaten on the side of her stomach, yes.
Mm-hmm. Right on. The caller...
It does appear that you all's treatment was different. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. The caller in retired firefighter in Florida, did you have a question for Sue Africa?
To the guests, would you say the only logical way that non-white people can trust a white person is when there's no longer a global system of racism, white supremacy?
I would say you're right about that. I would say you're right about that. Hello?
Okay.
Hello?
You said yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Do you hear me? Did you say yes?
Yes. I agree with you on that. You said, let me make sure I
okay,
understood what you said, because you broke up. He said, would I agree
that the only... No, I didn't break up. Ma'am, I didn't break up. You said yes.
I'm listening.
That's all I have, Gus. And I'm going to mute my line.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Appreciate it. The caller at 3539, did you have a question for Sue Africa?
Steve, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, sorry, Gus. Peace, Gus, and all the callers, and to the guests, too. I have two questions, and I apologize if one's been asked. But I saw that you kept repeating that you'll never leave MOVE, so I just want to know what your ultimate goal is. Like, what's your ultimate goal?
I can't.
She said, what's your ultimate goal?
I can't hear.
Since you said you'll never leave MOVE, what is your ultimate goal?
my ultimate goal personally, is that what she's talking about, is to become as strong without any phoniness in me and to be real and to exhibit and apply the teachings of John Africa and be an honest, trustworthy person. That's my goal. That's what I'm working for. I can't hear anything, Gus. I can't hear it. I can't
hear me.
Say it again, ma'am. I didn't hear your question.
I can't.
Oh, I was asking if you can hear me, Gus.
I can hear you now. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I was just asking because I lost my train of thought now.
It's like your volume is fluctuating. It's like it'll
okay,
be.
Okay, hold on, right quick.
Okay.
Okay, hello. Is it any better?
A little bit.
Hello. Okay, maybe it'd be a bad connection. But I was just going to ask, I thought that maybe the ultimate goal would be to take down this system that she keeps talking about. So I guess I'm a little confused on her goal, just to keep living.
Well, I can't do that. No, I thought you were saying a personal, and that's why I was telling. If you're talking about my ultimate goal in MOVE for, the direction of MOVE, is to eliminate the system. Eliminate the system, yes. But I can't do that.
And that's why I started out
until I undergo the personal.
You'll never leave MOVE, so what's your ultimate goal? Okay.
I can't hear anything at all.
By setting it up.
I can't hear anything now. I can't hear anything. What's happening with the connection, though?
It may just be a bad connection.
She said it could be a bad connection. Was that your last question, ma'am?
Hello?
Yes, ma'am. Was that your last question?
The second question was just going to be, I want her thoughts on Black Lives Matter, and I'll mute my line.
Okay. Did you hear that? What are your thoughts on
Black Lives Matter? I just heard Black Lives Matter.
What are your thoughts on
Black Lives Matter? I think they're doing very, very, very urgent, important work in taking a stand and standing up to this racism and murderous assault on black people. And they're very courageous, and they're uncompromising, and they're doing good work.
Right on. Last two callers, 6241, 6241. Did you have a question for Sue Africa?
Yes, good night. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Okay. good night to the caller. I'm just going to ask her a few questions real quick. Gus, maybe you can relay it to her if she can hear me well. My first question is, how long have you been a part of the MOVE organization?
42 years.
Okay.
Hello?
And, yes, and can you recall ever practicing racism consciously or subconsciously before you were a part of MOVE?
Oh, yes, I did. I did. I spoke earlier, but you must not have heard the early part of the show. Oh, yes, I did. Absolutely. I did. I wasn't even aware of it, but it was in me.
And now my last question.
That's the trick with a lot of white people. They're not even aware of it. I can't hear Gus.
Okay, and my last question is, do you think it would... Hello, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Oh, God. No.
Yes, okay. My last question is, do you think it would be more constructive for you as a white person to work with white people to end the system of racism, white supremacy, or to work with non-white people?
I feel like the work I'm doing right now is good. You know, I work with both. You know, I cannot leave the organization and be effective. Doesn't work like that. But I do work with white people, and I do bring white people to understand and see the racism and superiority in them. I absolutely do. Gus, I have a phone call coming in from the prison at 10:15. I had thought the show was over at 10, so I told them to call at 10:15.
Oh, okay.
From Cambridge Springs.
That's
so I'm going to have to go.
Yes, ma'am. I appreciate you hanging
in. All right,
on
the move.
For sure, on the move.
God. On the move. Long live John Africa forever.
Mm-hmm. Sue Africa. Joining us live, the Move Organization. I'm picking up an echo. I'm not sure. I'm not sure why that is. Let's see. Oh, I don't hear it now. Grand. That is amazing. I can tell, folks, I had some consternation about this program because I knew that I'm suspicious any individual who is classified as white. You're just, I'm just saying suspect, just not to name call. But I mean, white equals racist. So I knew it was not going to be any sort of, fascination. And I was not going to be listening in the same manner that I listened when Ramona Africa was with us just a few weeks back. And after about 30 minutes, it was, I think that was about the point where I just asked her about, is it logical? Because I just did not have, it was like I was just listening to any other white person talking. I said I would clarify for listeners, not her. I really didn't feel like explaining myself for a suspected racist. But when she said that white people give you, I'm not a racist. I dated a black guy. My friends are black. That is exactly what she did. I was cracking up laughing. I was muted, but I was like, that's exactly what she did today. And then she said, that ain't so. Well, she gave us character witnesses. She mentioned the late Herman Ferguson. God bless the dead. She mentioned Herman Ferguson, who said he didn't like white people, but he liked Sue Africa. She gave character witnesses of people to say, well, such and such thinks I'm great, and they know what I've done, and I'm in Move Organization and John Africa and all these people that she's around. And, these are the black people that I hang out with. I can't be racist if Herman Ferguson thinks that I'm cool and he doesn't even like white people, but he thinks I'm okay. Like, it was exactly what she said in the same rhetoric that white people are ignorant about racism, that she was even ignorant about her own racism until she joined this group of mostly black people. And then they started pointing out the ways that she was being racist, like using her sister, I put that in quote, her sister's coat that was knitted, made by a family member. She uses that, not her own jacket, not her own clothing. She uses this black female's designer coat, nice jacket for her. I was cracking up laughing on that too. Fascinating. One of the really more intriguing broadcasts that we have been a part of. I said yesterday I was really looking forward to this. This is going to be a hoot. I was, hoping to do fewer programs this month, but man, oh man, I'm glad we were able to make it happen. One point that I can give, I think it's always good if you can be at a point where when the name calling and accusations, because she said that I must be a cop and some of the other things, like if you can, even if you can get to a point where nothing even need be said, like particularly if you have an agenda, if you have specific things that you are trying to accomplish, focus on, then to just stay focused on what it is that you're trying to accomplish. Like, I think a lot of times racists use words to misdirect us. She talked about being distracted to make you lose your focus. One of the ways they do that is just to try to either make personal attacks, false accusations and things. They'll do that so that you can get upset or you move your focus from whatever agenda you had to defending yourself. Sometimes it can be best to just, evade all of that. Yes, I'm a cop, right? Mm-hmm. Now back to Now back to what it is we're supposed to be talking about, because they will do that sort of thing a lot to get you off defending on some sort of personal insult. The tacky game is deep. It was fascinating in so many different ways. We might have to do a review session. But I will tell you, I had consternation about this program because I know that she does. She's, you know, Ramona Africa is a part of the same organization. And I do have great regard for Ramona Africa and, you know, what the black people went through with that organization. And certainly Mumia Abu-Jamal. I have learned a lot. And I was like, man, all of that, you know, is valid. But at the same time, Sue Africa is on the racist suspect list forever. I don't care what she has gone through, what she's experienced. She agreed with the logic when retired firefighter asked her if the only way it's logical for a black person to trust a white person is after the system of white supremacy has been vanquished. She said that was true, although she would not agree with the logic about being suspicious of her as a white woman. She would not co-sign on that logic. But I was, you know, I had concerns. I was like, oh, man, you know, they could listen to the program and be like, you know, that Gus dude is crazy or, you know, whatever. Which would, you know, be a bummer. But I get that might be something that they call having a little integrity. I would just say, you know, if you have a code, that is also part of the code. And sticking to it. It's not personal. You know, I would hope that doesn't happen. But, you know, at the end of the day, just being truthful, Sue Africa, I am not impressed. I don't care how many stories she has to tell and, you know, how long she's been in the organization. To me, she sounds very much like most, if not all, of the other whites that I have talked to, certainly the ones that have been guests on this program, who practice racism, white supremacy, in really a lot of the same ways. The interrupting, the talking on and on and on and on.
You're just saying just buckets and buckets of words.
Without answering the question, oh my God, that was legendary. Legendary when she moved to, we had the whole gambit of black people are to blame, black people who sold other black people into slavery, President Obama, Wilson Good, Colin Powell. We had the whole gambit of black people to be blamed. Fascinating. Fascinating. We'll be here tomorrow. We're not doing the 3-hour hangout because we should be here tomorrow with Antoinette Harrell, the Dozier School in Florida. Man, we will have to devote a study session to going through and reviewing some of what we heard on the program. Fascinating, fascinating, fascinating. It was great hearing from the callers. Glad we got as many callers in as possible during the broadcast. But what a hoot. What a hoot. Cows Classic. I cannot wait to listen to you. We'll have to do a listen study session to pick out some of the juicier tidbits of the broadcast, because it was quite a hoot. But we'll be here tomorrow, same time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Antoinette Harrell, really important program. I know we have listeners in the Florida area. Should be mandatory if you were born in the state of Florida, if you live there. I talk about knowing some of the local history about racism, white supremacy. That's certainly something you should be talking about with your children. The Dozier School in Florida, you should know. Tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Looking forward to that. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in, calling in. Woohoo! What an evening. We will have commentary. You feel free to drop an email as well, untiljustice@gmail.com, if you want to share any thoughts. untiljustice@gmail.com. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism. Say that all the time, all the time. If you're going to be out and about in a vehicle, you do not want to be under the influence and be stopped by Daniel Holtzclaw, Darren Wilson. Let's be sober so we can make phenomenal decisions, keep ourselves as safe as possible. Once again, one of the worst combinations in the known universe, whites, alcohol. It has been time. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each area of people activity, every time we're in contact
with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Kyle signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.